hope and fear sleeping together.
I mean, it's okay, right? For you, use. As long as they've had their owl training and they're doing it safe. But why would I suspect even that they're having this relationship? You might say, Dave, are you jumping to conclusions? Have they even been seen together? Well, what would you have for proof or evidence? How about some book titles? Here we go. Never Turn Away, The Buddhist Path Beyond Hope and Fear. Seems kind of old. Afghanistan, Between Hope and Fear. Uh-oh, they're from the East. I wonder if they're Muslim. Trekkies may remember the title of the Season 4 episode of Star Trek Voyager called Hope and Fear, 1998. Here we go, Hope and Fear in America. Wow, they're here already. This American Life, Stories of Hope and Fear. Hope and Fear in Washington. They're not only here, they're in Washington. The House of Hope and Fear. Oh, God, they're living together already. The Hopes and Fears, Everyday Theology for New Parents and Other Tired, Anxious People. I guess we can see where this is going. Here's the decal. Hope is the only thing stronger than fear. Not hope is stronger than fear. Hope is the only thing. So it's not just hearsay. They have been seen together a lot, and for a pretty long time, it seems. Well, if they're not sleeping together, then what is the relationship? Can you tell I've had too much fun with this analogy? They say opposites attract, but are they opposite? Let's play I say something and you say the opposite. Ready? Black.
White.
Hi.
Love.
Hope.
Here.
Really? I mean, not like despair or hopelessness. It just seemed like they weren't kind of in the same. Well, how about fear? It's kind of hard, isn't it? Love, you know? It's hard to come up with one single thing. If you look in the thesaurus, actually, they say for opposite of hope, doubt or questioning. For fear, it's, as a verb, it's accept or abide. Doesn't quite do it for me, but okay, well, it's hard to say that they're really opposites. I mean, they don't sort of look exactly like that. Besides, opposites usually define the extremes, right, of some continuum where you have one or the other. But in this case, you can have both, right? One doesn't exclude the other. You can have strong fear and strong hope together, just as you can have strong fear and strong courage. In fact, fear seems to go together with several things that we might consider somewhat in the opposite direction. Oh God, I wonder if hope knows. Fear seems to be, if you'll permit me another analogy, more of a sort of a common denominator of several combinations of human thoughts and behaviors. I say human. We don't know about the animals, but all our analysis seems to be on the human part. Let's be clear, it's not like hope and fear get along well together. They seem always to be fighting one another. As we know, this is no proof that they're not, you know. It just makes the nature of the relationship a little more puzzling, right? Is that a good word, puzzling? So how can we proceed? We presumably know something about these characters from our own experience, though agreement about their nature is probably as unlikely as tax reform. Oh, wait. Talk about lack of agreement. But I digress. So let's visit some published thought on these two. in Hope's Corner. We go back to St. Thomas Aquinas, who included hope as one of the three theological virtues, right after faith and before charity. Aquinas distinguishes between faith and hope by saying, faith has to do with things that are not seen, and hope with things that are not in hand. He describes hope in 1250 or so as the habit of acting like what we assent to with faith will actually come to pass. For instance, that we both actually have a shot at flourishing into happiness, and then choosing to act accordingly. It is the habit of embracing a higher standard of behavior because we believe that if we do, we will in fact turn into better, happier versions of ourselves, even if we know we'll never be perfect. He says the perfection of hope lies not in achieving what it hopes for, but embracing its standard. This is like the most noble definition of hope that I've ever seen. He goes on to talk about it as a future good, difficult but impossible to attain, but possible to attain, by means of divine assistance on whose help it leans. So for Aquinas, hope is very much connected with the divine. Fast forward about 400 years, we have Thomas Hobbes, who says, hope is nothing more than an appetite for a thing combined with the opinion that it can be had. Pretty pragmatic. That's Hobbes. Finally, we have Descartes, René Descartes, in a treatise called Passions of the Soul. Interesting title. Circa, 1649 or so. He describes hope as a disposition of the soul to persuade itself that what it desires will come to pass. Later we have Emily Dickinson describing hope as a thing of the soul, with feathers even, that never stops singing. And quite more recently, somebody named Maria Popova describes hope, a facility decidedly different from and far more muscular than optimism. Remains our most potent antidote to the passivity of resignation and resignation of cynicism. And hope even has its own Wikipedia page. You can check it out yourself. So in the other corner, back to Aquinas, fear is such a powerful emotion for humans that when we allow it to take us over, it drives compassion right out of our hearts. Rings true to me. Yet Aquinas counts fear, of a certain type anyway, as a gift from God. What do you want? It was the 1200s. Side note, most of the philosophers all acknowledge different kinds of fear, so they don't lump it all together. And they concentrate mostly on the kind generated by some process of thought, as opposed to the kind that makes you scream when it jumps up in your face, when danger jumps into your face. Aquinas is always also the guy who said, beware the man of one book. So back forward again to Hobbes, who says, only fear of death and bodily harm causes humans to seek peace. Like I said, he's brutally pragmatic. He says, the mediation between power and fear, as manifested in human affairs, is called manners. Okay. He says, only proper philosophy can successfully dispel fear. So, in truth, he really deals more with the role of fear than its nature. And then again from Descartes, fear is another disposition of the soul which persuades it that the thing desired will not come to pass. From our reading, Meredith Russo, it can keep you safe, and it can mangle your soul. pretty recently, a modern philosophical guy named Peter Boland has a blog. He says, fear is neither good nor evil. It is a message from our psyche that must be read with great care. In citing Roosevelt's speech in 1933, middle of the Depression, where the memorable phrase, we have nothing to fear but fear itself, was broadcast across a literally depressed nation, Boland writes, the radical notion that fear itself was the enemy, not external conditions, no matter how dire, was a message that brought hope into a hopeless world. How powerful is it, says Boland, to consider the possibility that fear, an important ally when carefully and critically managed, can become the most crippling hindrance? Well, this reads a bit like a story character whose morality we can't quite figure out. Is fear a good guy or a bad guy? Pop singer John Mayer writes, fear is a friend that's been misunderstood. And yes, fear also has its own Wikipedia page. And here again, in Boland's description, we have hope and fear mentioned together. I'm beginning to think these two are inseparable. So what about that relationship? Hobbes maintained that the constant back and forth mediation between the emotions of hope and fear is the defining principle of all human actions. Really, Thomas? What about the rest of the cast, the other emotions? Are they just supporting actors? Then there's Descartes, again from Passions of the Soul. When hope is so strong that it altogether drives out fear, its nature changes, and it becomes complacency or confidence. And when we are certain that the thing we desire will come to pass, even though we go on wanting it to come to pass, we nonetheless cease to be agitated by the passion of desire which caused us to look forward to it with anxiety. Likewise, when fear is so extreme that it leaves no room at all for hope, it's transformed into despair. And this despair extinguishes desire altogether. And it is to be noted, he says, although these two passions are contrary, one may nonetheless have both together. And neither of these passions ever accompanies desire without leaving room for the other. So here Descartes points out that hope and fear may be at odds and fight with each other, they nonetheless need each other somehow. Well, psychologists have a name for this kind of relationship, right? Or less anthropomorphically, any Scrabble players in the group? Less anthropomorphically, the well-balanced human social organism appears to need both, because one with the absence of the other seems to have some undesirable effects. So there you have it. Descartes' Passions of the Soul is often referred to. A lot of the New Age guys who treat this subject at all often cite this 1640s publication as an original source. So there you have it, albeit broad brush and sort of a light treatment, but I hope I've demonstrated to some degree that there is, in fact, a relationship between hope and fear. It's not just gossip. It's been there all along. It seems even to be wired in somehow. And while they are not exactly opposites, they do oppose each other. Moreover, what's needed in times of strong fear, are we there yet? Is strong hope. They go together. They need each other. Not passive optimism, but active hope that acknowledges the losses and the obstacles, yet enables us to act in accordance with the goal of that hope, in spite of the fear. That enables us to keep building the future we want to live in and want our children to live in. Think Roosevelt's speech. Think Mario Russo's act of resistance. Think like a tree. This is one ring. Some rings are thinner. Those are the ones that will send your roots deeper in search of the water.